Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Now, let me see. Owen, are you there? Alive and well, yeah?
I am. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. Good man yourself. Okay, this time on the phone. Much safer to stick with the Alexander Graham Bell. Now, this very month, July, in other words, back in the year 1937, the American aviation pioneer Amelia Earhart went missing on her attempt to make the first round-the-world flight. She's almost completed two-thirds of her journey when she disappeared over the Pacific Ocean. Amelia Earhart is only one of a number of very famous people who've vanished without trace down through the years. And Owen, as in Mr. Sweeney, has been looking at some of these. So, Amelia Earhart, start us off with that.
Yeah, Lady Lindy, as she was known, obviously in the shadow of Charles Lindbergh. I don't know if she had his disputed politics. But anyway, she disappeared in 1937, as you say, in the Pacific. No sign, no trace of her nor her navigator, Frederick Noonan, has ever been found. She was travelling on from New Guinea, so it was kind of this tiny island called Howland Island. There was US Coast Guard ships, at least one anyway, certainly in close contact with her physically, or so they thought, and radio contact. She had low fuel. She kind of had radioed in. She couldn't find them. They couldn't find her. She probably tried to land in the water. As I say, no sign of her, the co-pilot or navigator, the plane, a boat, whatever. Completely without trace, Amelia Earhart disappeared off the face, or the surface at least, the earth.
And, she wasn't. Amongst other things, conspiracy theories, etc., it gave Joni Mitchell her greatest song ever, which is called Amelia. So we don't know about that. What about Richie Edwards from Manic Street Preachers?
Yeah, Richie Edwards is probably the most famous musical one, isn't he? He disappeared in February 1995. I think we all remember this very well. He was certainly the pin-up poster boy of the band. He clearly had problems, both physical and mental issues. And I suppose it wasn't long after he carved four real, the number four and the word real into his arm, as journalists were kind of decrying them after their second album, I think, about being kind of just, you know, posers and all that sort of thing. The Holy Bible had kind of made it, I suppose, his ultimate artistic statement the year before. The band were going good guns. They were meant to go to America. You've echoes of Ian Curtis there as well, of course. And he disappears. His car then turns up months later by the Severn Bridge, the physical link from England to Wales, in a well-known spot for disappearances of various natures. He's only officially declared dead in 2008. The band, of course, much like, I mean, you mentioned David Gilmour there, much like Pink Floyd and other bands were members kind of, and I suppose Joy Division in New Order. Artistically, he's long been kind of a wellspring, and his absence has been kind of something that spurred them on to greater heights with Everything Must Go kind of the following year. Wasn't 96, I think, I might even give out that year. And, you know, they went on to the heights that they always kind of said they were. And Richie Edwards, the heights that he kind of claimed they would always reach. And I suppose Journal for Plague Lovers, was their kind of their tribute to him, using some of his lyrics that they never got round to using while he was still alive, because he as I say, he was declared legally dead, but no body has ever been recovered. And obviously, again, with all these people, it is obviously very an emotional issue for all of them, you know, because he was their pal, he was their bandmate, and they just don't know what happened. They can all suppose, but obviously the music press and music fans and everyone loves a tragic hero or anti-hero. Anyway, that's Richie. I suppose the most famous person, Dave, that disappeared without a trace. And again, who else loves them? Only the mainstream and the mainstream press, the quality press, and indeed the tabloid press. And that's Lord Lucan in 1974. The Freddie Mercury lookalike. If you ever read Smash Hits from the 1980s, and I wouldn't accuse you of doing so, but I certainly did. They used to call Lord Frederick Mercury of Lucan, or Lord Frederick Lucan of Mercury was what they called Freddie Mercury in Smash Hits. Anyway, Lord Lucan had fallen out with his wife in a huge way. He was a well-known kind of cad, I suppose you call these upper-class members of the aristocracy in London, and the wife and himself obviously had their own issues, and it is supposed that he arrived back at the house one day intending to murder his wife. He ended up in the darkness or confusion or whatever stage he was in, killing the nanny, and then promptly absconding, and no sign no sight. Well, there's supposed sightings of him ever since. So he's kind of the byword for the mysterious disappearance. Mm. And, you know, as I say, the quality press loved it because he was, loved it's the wrong phrase, I suppose, to dispute that, but because he was a peer. He was the 7th Earl of Lucan. John Bingham was his name. And interestingly enough, given the way these things work in the UK, he wasn't declared dead. This is 1974 now when the murder happened, and he was a murderer. Until 1999, and then his son, and this is probably what the Telegraph et al. Would be most interested in, his son wasn't allowed to inherit his title and therefore become the 8th Earl of Lucan, which obviously is Irish residence, until 2016, so say the BBC in my research for this. He's meant to have gone off to a pub and then, you know, he disappeared. There were sightings over the years in Australia, India, South Africa, etc., and various people saying they did this, they knew he did that, they helped him do this. But look, none of it's ever been proved and none of it ever will.
Okay, so we're looking here at Amelia Earhart, we're looking at Richie Edwards, Lord Lucan, famous people who simply disappeared. Now, I want to play a piece of music from somebody who made music in America back in the maybe 50s or 60s, I'm not 100% sure. This is Connie Converse, a small little piece called Talking Like You.
In between two tall mountains there's a place they call Lonesome. Don't see why they call it lonesome. I'm never lonesome now I live there.
Connie Converse. Tell us about Connie Converse, Owen.
Well, Connie Converse is one of these what might have been artists relatively recently rediscovered. That those recordings were made in the 1950s, as you say, but the album was released, How Sad, How Lovely is the name of the record, was released by a small New York label in 2009. She disappeared in 1974. She was kind of, I suppose, a pro. You mentioned Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan and all these people kind of descended upon the coffee houses of North America, in Greenwich Village in particular. And she was living in Greenwich Village in the 1950s. So she was a little ahead of her time. I think that was possibly the problem here. She was, as you say, a singer-songwriter, much in the vein of Joni. But long before it was the done thing, the folk scene was all traditional standards and that hadn't kind of been broken up yet as kind of the canon. Yeah, and people weren't doing direct, personal, kind of first-person stories. And this work, you know, obviously it was before her time. You know, she tried, she got a good bit of help. People recorded these things. They recorded in the kitchen of a future Oscar animator, Oscar-winning animator, Gene Deitch, in 1954. It never happened for her, Dave. 20 years later, you know, after humdrum day jobs and broken dreams, etc., and I suppose the actual birth of the singer-songwriter movement, genre, if you want to call it that, and kind of days after her 50th birthday, she sent a few fond letters to her family and friends telling her she was going off to make a fresh start. She packed everything she owned, as the story goes, into her Volkswagen Beetle, left her home now in Michigan, and she has not, as they say, been seen since. But the recordings kind of resurfaced. And again, people love these stories. Do you know what I mean? Kind of, you know, artists that almost made it. Some that kind of go into obscurity, but are still alive, you know, and some make it small ways, thinking Sugar, Searching for Sugar Man, these sort of things. But yeah. Connie Converse absolutely disappeared again, to use the horrible phrase, off the face.
Yeah, I mean, the Searching for Sugar Man, which won the Oscar about 6 or 7 years ago, I mean, the important thing about that was it all started off, you know, which one did he die of? Did he die on stage? Did he just go disappear? And then you get into the full story, which is fascinating. Anyway, I presume we're talking here about famous people who just disappeared off the face of the earth. I presume one of the most famous is the Prime Minister of Australia, not so long ago.
Yeah, 1967. It's a strange one, this, because I suppose if you're into Australian politics, or relatively recent Australian politics, I suppose as most Australian politics is, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming out about Gough Whitlam at the moment, who, of course, was fired famously in the 1970s. But one of his immediate predecessors was the 17th Prime Minister of Australia, and that's Harold Holt, who decided in December 1967 that he'd go for a swim on a beach in Victoria, a Cheviot beach. And the weather, it has been reported, obviously, a long time since, was atrocious that day. He went swimming. He never returned to shore. Now, you would think, obviously, this is fairly clear-cut, but he was the Prime Minister of Australia. A 2005 investigation did conclude he drowned, but, of course, there were any number of conspiracy theories going around at the time. Of course, Australia in 1967, you think of the Vietnam War. Australia was very well in with America at that stage, and obviously they sent a lot of soldiers to Vietnam. And all this sort of stuff is going on in the background as well as domestic politics, etc. Weirdly, Dave, there was no official inquest. The Australian law, or at least the law that covered this case at the time, didn't allow for an inquest when there was no body. So...
That's just, I mean, like even with Olof Palme in Sweden and all that kind of thing, the amount of messing up that went on directly after when he was murdered walking on the street, coming back from the cinema. I mean, that kind of thing, like there was no official inquest because you couldn't do that without a body.
it's bizarre, isn't it? It is bizarre. And I just, again, reading around this kind of, obviously the story was known, but the state of Victoria in some ways commemorated they named a swimming pool after him, which is one of these kind of unfortunate things that happen. When you think about, actually, do you know, here's a funny one. You know, in Celtic Park, when they redeveloped Celtic Park, Parkhead, the home of Glasgow Celtic Football Club, they named the restaurant after brother Walford, who is, you know, kind of the man who famously set up Celtic, but he ran soup kitchens in the day, but they named a restaurant after him. And they named the bar after Jock Steen, who was their greatest manager, and also famously gave teetotal. So they named the bar after him. But there you go.
There you go, indeed. You can always order a Coke. Okay, where's
next? Mention Sean Flynn?
Sean Flynn, yeah.
Yeah, Errol Flynn's kid. Obviously a man who lived with a huge, imposing shadow. And I would have advised him against going into a career in acting, but what did he do? Of course, being son of Errol Flynn, Sean went and tried his hand at movies, obviously a Hollywood childhood, etc. He was in about 10, I think, 80% of which bombed officially. And, you know, you'd think he could have lived a playboy lifestyle, but he obviously wants to emerge from psychologically the shadow of his dad, and Errol Flynn, obviously, swashbuckling heroic figure. So this guy vanished in 1970. Prior to that, he decided he would... try his hand, and he was a good photographer, so he signed up as a photojournalist for Time magazine. One of his famous photographs, if it's not too early in the day to mention these things, when is it, is of a Viet Cong soldier strung upside down by the ankles and being tortured, or at least whatever, by American soldiers. You'll know the photograph yourself. So he shot that. He was obviously seeing a bit of time out there, and that's exactly what he wanted to do. But in 1970, he'd moved on to Cambodia, where obviously the war had kind of, or the Viet Cong were in operation then. And himself and another journalist went off to try and kind of do, you know, the more daring photo, stories that they could do, one of which was a Viet Cong checkpoint, and they never came back. Do you know, I suppose you wouldn't really have heard about him too much, only he was the son of Errol Flynn, and indeed kind of a one-time actor himself. But I suppose Khmer Rouge in Cambodia are known to have killed at least 30 foreign journalists during the war.
What about Jim Sullivan? Who's he?
He's another guy. Now, he's a pal of Harry Dean Stanton, and this is a guy who probably, I mean, whatever Connie Converse, and she's kind of been rediscovered, Jim Sullivan was a guy who really was very close to making it. He was active in the LA rock scene of the late 60s. After one of his gigs, you know, he got some well-to-do backers. He somehow reckons he was such a decent bet, a kind of success, that he got the Wrecking Crew, you know, the seminal Wrecking Crew to back him on his record. I'm not going to tell you the name of the record just for a second. Bear with me. Anyway, it doesn't happen for him in 1969-70. He still plugs away at it, et cetera, et cetera. But he's had enough by March 1975, Dave, with LA. So he's leaving the West Coast. He's $120 in his pocket. And 15 hours later, he's outside Santa Rosa, New Mexico. He checks into a local motel. Soon after, his car is found 26 miles from the motel, and he's never seen or heard from ever again. Now, he was on his way to Nashville, because obviously he's a singer, songwriter, musician. He was going to go one last hell for leather go of it and go to Nashville, you know, Music City, USA, and try and make it. Now, one of the theories, he was in New Mexico, which of course is also home to Roswell, let's be fair, was that he was abducted by, of course, aliens. But the name, the name of his LP, Dave, what was his LP
called? No idea.
UFO.
Aha, so he was abducted by aliens.
So, and included in the song, including the lyrics of the songs on the album are tales of long highways, leaving his family behind and being abducted by aliens in the desert. Now, you could say two out of three of those are also, you know, the backbone of a lot of Bruce Springsteen songs from that time. Yeah. But the aliens in the desert bit is the bit that kind of, you know, I suppose, people cling on to. Who doesn't love a good conspiracy?
Did you just say cling on? Anyway,
where
are we going with this? Okay, now, like, I mean, like, Dorothy Arnold is another one. I'm like, she was in the middle of Central Park in the middle of the day, never seen again.
What's that? 1910. it's kind of she's the I suppose, you know, looking for Paris Hilton or whoever, the kind of these wealthy socialites. She was the scion, the offspring. She was 25 years of age, of a very well-to-do Upper East Side New York, you know, family. The Arnolds. Their descendants came across in the Mayflower. So they were, you know, primo stock. And she was a frustrated writer. There are all these elements there. She kind of had fallen out with her dad, who refused to let her move out of the house, if you believe that. She had a secret P.O. box going on, you know, for kind of secret correspondence, which is her putative writing career. She was having a relationship with a man who was 20 years older than her. And she had recently pawned her jewellery after an assignation with them. So it had all these details. And on top of that, her dad, being, you know, kind of well-to-do or whatever, fearful of bad publicity, had decided that when she had gone missing, he would wait a few weeks before going public. He hired his own kind of private eyes, etc., before eventually going to the police. Then said, you have to have a press conference. What happened after the press conference? Again, the quality paper loved it because, you know, papers loved it because she was who she was and from the family she was. And the tabloids loved it because, you know, star-crossed lovers or whatever was going on, the usual tawdry details. And either way, the papers loved it. The press conference happened and they had loads of kind of false sightings, fake ransom notes, etc., etc. But she was never found again. And there are all sorts of credible theories, but no evidence. And it was the middle of Central Park in December 1910. And a very well-known person, I assume very well-dressed, etc., etc. You'd imagine some sign, you know, not the least populated urban area in the entire world, is it? She just completely disappeared off the face of the earth. So whether she wanted to go and live in obscurity, I don't know. She kind of, her family were very kind of mean to her about her boyfriend, who was like 2 decades and then some older than her, but also kind of her writing aspirations. Like her dad, she wanted to go off and live in Greenwich Village, funny enough, and kind of, you know, set herself up as a writer. She had rejection letters, which is why the P.O. box was set up. But, you know, there's a movie there, Dave, somewhere. Write the script.
All right, well, then listen, for the last one, let's go up to date. And this is somebody who disappeared more than disappeared off the face of the earth and has never been seen since. Give us the story of Fan Bingbing.
Yeah, Fan Bingbing. This is 2 years ago now. She's a very well-known actress. Certainly, she's been in dozens of movies in her native China. She crossed over into Hollywood with the X-Men franchise. And she disappeared. She was very active on social media. And what's interesting about this is it's a very modern story. She disappeared from the public eye, i.e. social media, from July to October 2018, which coincided with authorities in China discovering that she and her companies had been operating two different invoice systems. She'd been evading tax, Dave. And the information leaked out or was kind of there was a blooper, I think. Somebody messed up anyway and kind of printed the wrong details. But it came to light that she had been evading millions in euro, dollars, whatever you want, yuan, in tax money. And for someone who'd been so active, very publicly, as most people are nowadays, on social media, she just, absolute silence. She was in China and people feared the worst. But in 2019, she gave a rare interview to the New York Times where she, amongst other things, almost appears to thank the Communist Party for disappearing her, for vanishing her. And she said, it may be a trough I encountered in my life, or my work, this trough is actually a good thing. It made me calm down and think seriously about what I want to do in my future life, and all this sort of kind of coded phrases. But I suppose, looking at it from the outside and knowing what we do know about what goes on in mainland China sometimes for those who kind of fall out of favour with the state, the word re-education has been mentioned, you know, in dispatches. Mm. And also, but she did reappear. That's the important thing. I think that's kind of, so she wasn't, you know, Weibo was, I suppose, the great Chinese social media channel. And she kind of said, you know, I suppose she didn't understand the relationship between the benefits of the country, the society, and the individual. And she took advantage.
Yeah.
And without the party and country's good policies, without the love of the people, there would be no Fan Bingbing.
Right,
and
okay.
She is Fan Bingbing.
I believe every word of it. By the way, one last thing. She's activated. I mean, she's been reactivated. I mean,
she's been reanimated, Dave.
Yeah, right.
She's been reanimated.
They've wound her up from the back and put new batteries in. Off she goes. But is she acting again?
She is, I believe, in China. Well, also, she's been in Vanity Fair, so she's kind of been out You know, I don't want to say too much in case I ever want to go to China, but I think she's back in the public. She's back in public life, right. But she's probably been very circumspect. Yeah. In what she is saying. She was in X-Men Days of Future Past. She wasn't in Back in the Day.
All right, okay.
So,
I'm just wondering if she does any interviews in the West, she'd want to watch herself, just in case she says the wrong thing and then goes home. Okay, well, listen, look, thank you so much for talking to us on the programme today. Good man yourself. That is Owen Sweeney, and I'll see you.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.